Hello, everyone. Welcome to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger. We're reading from the editions of Friday, May 28th and Saturday, May 29th. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Glad to have you listening, as always. Got lots to get to today, so let's not waste much time. Flips, tricks, and applause as Fort Dodge schools celebrate the last day of school. Plenty of talent and games were on display at Fort Dodge Schools on Friday as students and staff closed the book on another academic year. At Duncombe Elementary School, students showed off their skills with soccer tricks, singing, dancing, gymnastics, and even a game show. It was all part of the school's talent show. Whether it was singing or dancing, the song Old Town Road by Little Nas X featuring Billy Ray Cyrus was a clear favorite of the students. Drake Brookshire, a first grader, performed a rendition of the popular country rap tune. Brookshire held the microphone close to his mouth as he sang the words, "I'm going to take my horse to the old town road." Decorian Knight, a six-year-old, rolled out the crash mat to perform some gymnastics. The crowd seemed to think his headstand was on point. Jabrell Wilson, a nine-year-old second grader, drew a flower to show the audience. Arizona Warwick, an eight-year-old second grader, showed off her flexibility by demonstrating the splits. Jazara Huff, age eight, Jenica Clark, seven, both in seventh grade, brought their teacher in on the fun. The two girls were joined by Trisha Dorn for some sassy dancing. Meanwhile, Butler Elementary School had a flurry of activity with everything from beanbag toss in a bouncy house to can jam and a tennis ball race. Can jam involves a disc. The object of the game is to throw the disc into a can with a small slit in it. For the tennis ball race, students had to do a combination of hopping, skipping, and walking backwards from their starting spot to the other side. Once there, they place the ball in a bucket and run back. The first team to get all of the balls in the bucket wins. Isaiah Taylor, a nine-year-old fourth grader, was enjoying a game of beanbag toss. At one point, he broke out in a dance as music played over the loudspeaker. Harmony Owens, an eight-year-old second grader, had the rock climbing figured out, and her fellow students cheered her on every step of the way. Cold and rainy conditions forced some of the planned outside activities to be moved inside. The tennis ball race remained outside, and some students weren't fans of the decision. "It's freezing out," one student said. With temperatures in the 40s for most of the day, the conditions were a little brisk. And while a lot of the games were high energy, Emily Winninger, a special education teacher, said she had a group of students who were perfectly content hanging out in the library and reading books. "It's nice and quiet in here," she said. She did take the students out for some sidewalk chalk, but the weather kind of put a damper on it. Winninger said the year went too fast. "It doesn't feel like the end of the school year at all." At Fort Dodge Middle School, excitement was in the air as the clock approached 12:55 p.m. Students and staff lined up the sidewalk just south of the school to applaud the 8th grade class as they were dismissed. It was a continuation of a tradition that started a few years ago to send off the 8th graders as they will go to the high school next year. As the last 8th graders walked by giving high fives to younger students, one staff member was hesitant to say it was over. "That's because the rest of the clerics were to go back to class. I'm afraid what will happen when I say go," she said. And there are several pictures of this in this article of all these different students doing different things around the school. Heading back to the main page of the Messenger, we'll be in search of our next article as soon as my computer decides to catch up. The next article is entitled "A Mother to the Community." First time Jane Burleson ran for public office in Fort Dodge in the 1970s, she'd lost. But that turned out to be a small blip on the radar for what became an unforgettable political career. The next time she ran in the early 1980s for a spot on the city council, she made history. Burleson became the first woman and first woman of color to be elected to the council. "When I ran, I lost the first time," she recalled as she sat with friends and relatives outside Coppin Chapel AME Church on Tuesday, "but I said I'm not giving up. I'm coming back, and I lost against a pretty powerful political person, but I didn't let that stop me. I ran, and I won. I'm proud of being the first woman and woman of color on the council." No one has served on the city council longer than her 24-year tenure. Burleson, who now lives out of state, came back to visit Fort Dodge and celebrate her 93rd birthday this past week. "And she'll be with me hopefully another 20 years," said Roberta Aleem, the relative whom Burleson lives with in Arizona. "She promised me 10 more." Aleem, along with Charlene Washington, Sherry Washington, Julia and Gwenda Naylor, and Sandra Bullock, joined Burleson at the church. Each of the ladies have at one point or another attended Coppin Chapel, and each say that Burleson served as an inspiration for African-American women in Fort Dodge. "I grew up with Jane," said Julia. "Sherry is my niece, Charlene is my sister-in-law, and I've belonged to Coppin Chapel ever since I was born. Burleson's been a member of Coppin Chapel all her life. I call her Mom and Jane," said Sherry, president of the Pleasant Valley Awareness Committee. "She's a mother to everyone she meets. She's been an inspiration in my life as long as I've known myself. She was always a hero, that woman that was standing up and fighting for everyone's rights. As a child and growing into my adulthood, that followed me because I followed her." Sandra Bullock of Greenville, South Carolina, made the trip to Iowa just to see Burleson. "She was always an inspiration to others," said Bullock, who grew up in Fort Dodge. "I drove from South Carolina to get her and celebrate her and all the wonderful things she's done for this community. She taught us about never giving up, always stand up for your convictions, but pay it forward and be kind." Burleson was heavily involved in civil rights locally and nationally for more than five decades. She worked for 33 years at Tobin, which later became George A. Hormel Company. After the plant closed in 1981, she went to work for the Fort Dodge Community School District as a special education teacher's aide. "People don't know kids until they get involved," Burleson said. "I was just shocked because I'd never been around children. Those kids are smart. They are loving children." Charlene has known Burleson for over 50 years. "I've known Mama Jane ever since I've been here," she said. "She would tell them children just how it was. If she had to be a mother to them, she would be at school or on the bus." Community involvement was of utmost importance to Burleson. "We had a ladies' book club, and she was the oldest there," Charlene said. "She could teach us about what she experienced. The thing I think she enjoyed the most, she wanted to get the community involved. When she walked in and rolled her eyes and said, 'Where were you? There was a meeting and I didn't see you. Here you are today, and where were you at the meeting?'" Charlene recalled Burleson wasn't afraid to call people out if they were missing meetings or a chance to be involved in the community. "The only time she would get upset is when she didn't see us at meetings," Charlene said. "If she didn't see anybody, she rolled her eyes at the church. She let everybody have it. She wouldn't back down. She was a mother to the community. That's why everybody called her was Mama Jane. Gwenda was in elementary school when she first encountered Burleson. "Us being kids, if you're doing something, other adults in the neighborhood could reprimand you and tell the parents on you," Naylor said. She was the mama. It was Burleson who inspired Gwenda to run for the school board. From 1992 to 1995, Naylor served on the Fort Dodge Community School Board, District Board of Education. She also became an advocate for Domestic Sexual Assault Outreach Center. "Mama Jane, she was the one that kind of opened doors for us African-American females," Gwenda said. "I'm proud to be acquainted with her." Each of the women gathered at the church wore matching polka dot skirts, and Sherry shared the reason for that. "She connected the dots for all of us," Sherry said, "so we are wearing polka dot skirts, because she connected the dots. This group of ladies has always tried to stay connected with each other." Sherry added, "Our elders generationally taught us to make time for each other, be there for one another, and always love one another, the ingredients for a solid, reliable support system." During her visit to Fort Dodge, Burleson popped into the city council meeting Monday at the municipal building. "I asked them on Monday night about the money, and they started cracking up," Burleson said. "I said, 'Are you spending too much money or getting too much money?'" She also had a message for Lydia Scherr, a current city councilwoman. "I said to her that I was glad she was on the council as another woman. I said, 'Don't let these guys get you because they think they know it all.'" Burleson said she was greeted by Fort Dodge Fire Chief Steve Hergenreder, who remembered her efforts in supporting the fire department's budget in the 1990s. "When budget time came up and it was police and fire, I said, 'The firemen take care of all of us. Life or death, you always need firemen,' he, Hergenreiter, said, "Jane, I remember when you fought for us firemen." Above all else, Burleson said she missed her friends. "I've been gone for almost 5 years, so I wanted to come back and see my friends," she said. "I'm not bragging, but I have a town full of friends, and I mean friends." Heading back to the Messenger for our next article. And Hiron Hanrahan and Denise McAnally cried and held each other as they took in the sight of an 18-foot-tall metal sculpture installed at Veterans Memorial Park this week. They cried because the sculpture, three spires soaring into the air with military fighter jets in a starburst formation, was created in honor of someone they loved dearly, Hanrahan's late husband and McAnally's only son. United States Air Force Master Sergeant Craig Hanrahan died at the age of 40 on August 1, 2020, in a non-service-related diving accident. Craig was a 1998 graduate of St. Edmund Catholic School. He enlisted in the Army National Guard at the age of 17 and eventually transferred to the U.S. Air Force in 2001. He married his wife in Seoul, South Korea in September 2006. The family and their three sons, Dane, Adrian, and Richard, were living at Eglin Air Force Base in Florida when he died. Craig's Hanrahan was McAnally's only child. When he died, his widow knew she needed to come home and be with family. Not the family she has back in South Korea, but the family she's come to know and love here in Fort Dodge. "There was no doubt that I'd move to Fort Dodge," she said. "I've never lived here, but I love his family. I gave up my job and my life in Florida to move here. It's a big family, and they're so good to me." When Inhyan, Hanrahan, and McAnally saw the sculpture for the first time on Friday, just in time for Memorial Day, both were completely surprised. "The surprise was orchestrated by Craig Hanrahan's cousin, Ben Crimmins. Our family just thought it would be neat to get a monument for him out here." Crimmins reached out to Dr. Terry Menke, a Fort Dodge councilman and organizer of the Veterans Memorial Park, with the idea. Menke connected him to Dan Perry, the sculptor from Cedar Falls, who created the Chronicle sculpture located across from the Fort Dodge Municipal Building. Crimmins' biggest obstacle was keeping the project a surprise from his cousin's mother and widow. He said McAnally had been calling Menke for a few months to have a memorial tree marker set out at the park. Menke played his part by stalling, saying he just couldn't find the right tree for the memorial. With help from Webster County Conservation preparing the space for the monument and a concrete base poured by Craig Hanrahan's best friend, Bill McElroy of McElroy Concrete, and donations from Hanrahan's family and friends, Crimmins' vision became reality. Perry said it took about 6 weeks to create the sculpture with its base. It stands about 18 feet tall and weighs around 600 pounds. Each of the three spires are made of stainless steel and are topped with solid aluminum models of Air Force fighter jets that Craig worked on as an aviation mechanic while he served. The design of the sculpture was inspired by the Air Force Memorial in Washington, D.C. "It's unbelievable. It's stunning," McAnally said of the memorial. "It's so big." She said her son would have loved the sculpture. "It's almost like it brought him back," she said. "He would be so honored." Ehyan was especially in awe of the sculpture because it gives her three sons a place to go to remember their daddy whenever they're missing him. "I'm glad I have a nice, supportive, and big family around here," she said. Heading back to the main page of the Messenger, we'll track down our next article. Green State Bank is announcing that they are closing their 27th Street location. Green State Credit Union, I called it a bank, Green State Credit Union has announced it will be closing its North 27th Street Crossroads location in late July and consolidating Fort Dodge operations at its downtown office located at 1207 Central Avenue. This move is in an effort to provide the best value to its member owners as well as to increase efficiency, the credit union reported. Craig Schlenz, the credit union's market president, noted this move will allow Green State to streamline operations. He said all staff members will transfer to the Central Avenue location. "As an organization, we are focused on taking a holistic approach to our members' financial needs," he said. "The opportunity to bring our three Crossroads employees to our downtown location will encourage more collaboration among our team and allow us to more completely and more efficiently serve our member owners." The office at 1207 Central Avenue in downtown Fort Dodge is a full-service bank which offers drive-up banking, night depository, interactive teller machine, and 24/7 ATM access. Services offered at this location include checking, deposits, mortgages, auto loans, credit cards, investment, trusts, and commercial services. For questions regarding the upcoming move, please contact the credit union at 955-0401. Green State Credit Union is the latest financial institution in Fort Dodge to announce the closure of one of its locations this year. Wells Fargo has already closed its branch at 5th Avenue South and South 25th Street. Northwest Bank has announced plans to close its branch at 1st Avenue South and 8th Street this summer. The Hurdle trial is being moved to Boone. The jury trial of a Fort Dodge man accused of shooting and killing his estranged wife will be moved to Boone County after efforts to seat a jury in Webster County earlier this week were unsuccessful. Justin Christopher Hurdle, 44, was arrested on August 6, 2020, for allegedly shooting and killing his estranged wife, Maggie Flint, the day before. Hurdle led police on a 17-hour manhunt across the city before he was tracked down by a Webster County Sheriff's Office canine at a shed near the junction of U.S. Highway 20 and Webster County Road P-59. Hurdle was taken to Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center for treatment of injuries to his face sustained by a self-inflicted gunshot wound, and then later charged with first-degree murder. On Tuesday, jury selection for Hurdle's trial began in Webster County. By 4 o'clock, the defense moved for a change of venue, and the prosecution did not resist the motion, so it was granted by Webster County District Court Judge Christopher Polking. In his order to change the venue, Polking wrote that, quote, it had become apparent in jury selection that a larger percentage of the jury pool than was expected by the parties had been exposed to information about the case and or knew the defendant, the alleged victim, and or the defendant's mother. Polking also cited pre-trial media coverage seen by potential jurors as grounds to move the trial venue. On Friday, the court ordered the trial move to Boone County Courthouse on June 22nd. Hurdle will be transferred to the Boone County Jail for the duration of the trial. Heading back to the main page of the Messenger, I'll click where it says More Local News, and I'm sure that we'll find something exciting there to read as well. Frontier Days starts this coming Friday. The annual three-day event known as Frontier Days is set to begin Friday at the Fort Museum in Frontier Village. The event was canceled in 2020 because we all know why. Opening ceremonies will begin at 5 o'clock near the flagpoles, according to Terry Cook, the lead organizer of the event. We are going to have a color guard there. We will honor Mike and Cindy Mulroney for doing the parade for so many years. Parade marshals Jan and Phyllis Wilson will also be introduced. Doctors and nurses will be honored. Doctors and nurses have done so much throughout the pandemic. Cook said that will be something neat to see. One late addition to the entertainment schedule for Friday night is Joe Denham, a country western artist from Nashville. He's traveling through, Cook said. One of his main hits is If I Had $1 Million. If I Had $1 Million. I think that's the song. Anyway, Denham will be performing from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock in the Opera House. The Tank Anthony Band, which provides or produces a soulful country sound, will perform under the tent from 8 to 11 p.m. Saturday begins with the parade at 10 o'clock along Central Avenue in downtown Fort Dodge. It's going to be about a 90-minute parade, Cook said. It's large. One addition is a group from the North Iowa Shriners. A Shriners group out of Mason City will have their little cars doing a routine during the parade. That's something I think people will love to see. Also on Saturday, the Webster County Health Department will hold a Johnson & Johnson vaccine clinic from 1 to 3 p.m. Later, the Senders, a rock and roll group from Northwest Iowa, will play from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. in the Opera House. At the same time, local favorite Saucy Jack will perform under the tent. Other entertainment on tap for the weekend includes Hillbilly Bob, Peter and Penelope, Professor Farquhar, Paul Bunyan Lumberjack Show, Carve Our Way Chainsaw Artist, Kids Tractor Pedal Pole, Arm Wrestling, Stilt Walking, Juggling, Fire Show, Straight Jacket and Escape Artist, Buck Skinner's Camp, Ghost Garrison, Hole in the Sock Gang, Sandhill Kid and Doc Voda, Quilt Raffle, Pioneer Marketplace, a Spelling Bee, and Food Vendor. Submission is $5, which gets attendees into the all event all weekend. We have a family fun-filled weekend for everyone. And we hope everyone will come out and enjoy what we have planned for them, Cook said. It's been a lot of work, but we have a lot of fun stuff planned. Cook is anticipating a good turnout. People are tired of being cooped up. They want to get out and do something. I think it will be a fun time. We'll head back to the previous page of the Messenger in search of our next article. And I'll have to click again to find something next to read. Fort Dodge man has been sentenced for 12 years for the Casey's robbery. Fort Dodge man who was convicted by a Webster County jury of committing an armed robbery at Casey's General Store on North 15th Street has been sentenced to a minimum of 12 and one-half years in prison. Aries Nzgo McGee, 24, was found guilty of first-degree robbery, a Class B forcible felony, after a four-day trial in early April. McGee was accused of flashing a handgun at the store clerk at Casey's and demanding money from the register and safe on October 28, 2020. He left the convenience store with $282 in cash. He was arrested in a traffic stop the next morning after officers spotted the same vehicle observed at the crime scene in traffic on North 15th Street near Oakland Cemetery. The crime of armed robbery carries a maximum sentence of 25 years in prison. A state statute requires that a person convicted of armed robbery after July 1, 2018 cannot be eligible for parole until they've served between 50 and 70% of their sentence. Speaking for the state at McGee's sentencing hearing on Friday morning, Assistant Webster County Attorney Brad McIntyre recommended that McGee be required to serve at least 70% of his sentence before being eligible for parole or work release. He cited McGee's use of a firearm while perpetrating the crime, the impact the crime had on the community, and deterrence of others from committing similar crimes as reason for the state's recommendation. Defense Attorney Arch Wilson recommended the 50% mandatory minimum for his client, citing McGee's age and lack of serious offenses in his record as justification for a lighter sentence. In fact, this is his first serious offense. I think 50% minimum would also act as the motivating factor to quicken my client's rehabilitation, Wilson said. McGee was also given the opportunity to state his case for himself. I would just like to apologize to all parties, victims, and to apologize to my daughter and family, he said. Webster County District Court Judge Kurt Stilby said McGee's lack of prior criminal record and the indications that he can be rehabilitated and deterred from reoffending were the factors that led him to impose the shortest prison sentence he could, a maximum of 25 years, with a mandatory minimum of half that to be served before McGee can be considered for parole or work release. McGee will be transported to the Iowa Medical Classification Center for in-processing to the Iowa Department of Corrections before he is assigned to a state prison. He will receive credit for the 7 months he served at the Webster County Jail while awaiting trial and sentencing. He will also have to pay $282 in restitution to Casey's General Store for the cash he stole during the robbery. A house fire is still under investigation. That is the title of the next article for us to read in The Messenger. A house fire that ousted a family from their home and led to the deaths of two of their beloved dogs remains under investigation by the Fort Dodge Fire Department. Crews were called to a home at 549 3rd Avenue North shortly after 8 o'clock on Wednesday for reports of heavy smoke coming out of the house. According to the fire department, Captain Jeff Hill, crews made an interior fast attack from the front door of the house to extinguish the fire. He said the cause of the fire remains under investigation, but it appears it started in the kitchen. The fire department initially responded with 10 crew members, but later sent out a second alarm that brought six more off-duty firefighters to the scene. No people were in the house when it caught fire, but the family's four dogs were inside. One dog was able to escape shortly after firefighters got through the front door. The second dog died at the scene from smoke inhalation, while two others were provided oxygen and care from firefighters until the dogs stabilized and were able to be transported to an animal hospital by the family. One of the dogs that was taken to the animal hospital did not survive the night. A Fort Dodge man facing felony weapons charges stemming from a June 2020 double homicide is asking the court to dismiss those charges on grounds that the state violated his rights to due process and a speedy trial. Daryl Jones, 23, of Fort Dodge, has gone through the gamut of judicial proceedings in this case. Jones was held in the Webster County Jail starting on June 24, 2020, on a material witness warrant until he was charged 139 days later on November 10, 2020. He was charged with two counts of second-degree murder, a Class B felony, and one count of felon in possession of a firearm, a Class D felony, after a deadly shooting in the Pleasant Valley neighborhood on June 16, 2020. Two Fort Dodge men, Jamail Cox, 25, and 47-year-old Tyrone Cunningham, were killed in a volley of bullets in the early morning hours of June 16. Two others, Marissa Andrews, 21 of Fort Dodge, and Jane Barton, 30 of Wesley, were injured but survived. After a five-month investigation involving multiple law enforcement agencies, five men, including Jones, were charged on November 10, 2020. In mid-April, First Assistant Webster County Attorney Ryan Baldridge moved to have the charges dismissed against Jones, saying that through depositions, the state learned information that led it to believe the charges could not be proven at trial by proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Baldridge then charged Jones with two counts of intimidation with a dangerous weapon, a Class C felony, along with one count of felon in possession of a firearm. Jones pleaded not guilty to the weapons charges on April 19th, and his trial is scheduled for June 29th. On Wednesday, Jones's defense attorney filed a motion to dismiss, arguing that the state violated Jones's rights to a speedy trial and due process. Defense attorney Stanley Roush wrote that the material witness proceeding was clearly a, quote, sham undertaken in bad faith with the true purpose of commencing punishment of the defendant for later allegations, end quote. The state has a pending request that the 139-day material witness hold be converted to a period of involuntary servitude, which allows the defendant to earn the mandatory statutory witness fees, but has them withheld based upon the possibility of future restitution obligation. Roush wrote, this leaves no doubt that the state arrested the defendant on June 24, 2020, with the purpose and intent to commence punishment for the later allegations of criminality. Jones remained in custody after the state dismissed the material witness hold and charged him with second-degree murder charges on November 10, 2020, until those charges were dropped on April 12, 2021, or another 153 days in custody. In total, Jones has been in custody for 292 days at that point. Roush argues that because Iowa Rule of Criminal Procedure requires that an indictment be found against the defendant within 45 days of arrest, and because an indictment was not found within 45 days of Jones's arrest on June 24, 2020, the charges against him should be dismissed. A hearing on this motion to dismiss is set for June 10th. If Jones's motion to dismiss fails, he has already filed a notice of his intent to reply upon the defense of self-defense and defense of others. Two counts of second-degree murder remain for the other four men charged, James Davis, Jr., 35 of Fort Dodge, Michael Shivers, 55, Jeremiah Hatton, 22 of Fort Dodge. Another defendant, Michael Wells, 33 of Fort Dodge, also saw two of his second-degree murder charges dismissed earlier this week. He was also then charged with two counts of intimidation with a dangerous weapon. Davis Jr., Shivers, and Wells also face an additional charge of felon in possession of a firearm. We'll head back to the main page of the Messenger, checking for our next article. Let's go ahead and take a real quick look at our From Our Files. From Our Files takes us back 15 years ago. It shows Clark Fletcher, president of the Fort Dodge Board of Education, handing Jennifer Farrell her diploma as Superintendent Linda Brock looks on during Fort Dodge Senior High commencement exercises at Dodger Stadium. And also from our files, taking us back 15 years ago to May 2006, there's a picture of youth shelter care students Victoria Johnson, Janika Brown, and Jessica Abrams as they listen to staff member Mandy Krause, who is sitting in an orange chair, making a point during a group discussion about gossip. Again, that goes back 15 years ago to May 2006. You're listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. And now we will look at today's obituary page. From Humboldt, Casey K. Baker. KCK Baker, 39, died Wednesday, May 26 in Humboldt. Services will be Wednesday, June 2 at Laufesweiler Funeral Home with burial in Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation is 4 to 7 Tuesday at Laufesweiler Funeral Home. She is survived by her husband, Josh, three sons, Jared, Caden, and Jace, mother and father, Julie and Gary Lowry, brother, Corey Lowry, sister, Stacy Nelson, grandmother, Shirley Nelson, grandmother, Barb Peary, and mother and father-in-law, Jackie and Doug Baker. She was preceded in death by her grandfather, Dwayne Nelson, her uncle, Phil Nelson, grandparent-in-laws Millie and Jean Baker, and Melvin and Patricia Blunt. Casey K. Lowry was born April 19, 1982 in Fort Dodge. She was raised and educated here. On June 9, 2000, she was united in marriage to Josh Baker, and the couple established their home in Fort Dodge and then moved to Humboldt. Besides helping raise her three boys, Casey worked various jobs as a CNA and did clerical work. She loved all critters and recently started fishing. Casey enjoyed time with her family and babysitting for family and friends. She was a wonderful mother and wife and will be forever missed by those who knew and loved her. Memorials may be left to the discretion of the family. Jeanette Holstein. A celebration of life for Jeanette K. Holstein, who was born April 28, 1952 and passed away March 9, 2021. Will be at Wright's Banquet Hall at 723 South 31st Street, Fort Dodge, from 3 to 7 on Sunday, June 6. You can leave your sadness at the door and join us as we celebrate the life of Jeanette. Jeanette was a beloved wife, mother, grandmother, and sister. We invite her friends and loved ones to join us. Beverages and dinner will be available. Dolores D. Olmsted. Services for Dolores D. Olmsted will be Tuesday, June 1st at 10:30 at the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Eagle Grove. Visitation is from 9 a.m. until time of service at the church. Faust Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. From Bert Pamela Madsen. Services for Pamela Madsen will be 10:30 Tuesday at St. John's Lutheran Church in Bert. Visitation 4 to 7 Monday at the church. Lent's Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. From Clarion, Larry C. Spora. Larry C. Spora, 75, of Clarion, died Thursday, May 27th at Iowa Specialty Hospital in Clarion. No services are planned. Ewing Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. And that is going to complete our look at today's obituary page. Let's head back to the news of record. Looking at the news of record for May 28th from Magistrate Court on Thursday. Controlled substance violation. Sean Goley, 45, of Fort Dodge. Hearing set for June 4th. Failure to affix a drug tax stamp. Sean Goley. Preliminary hearing June 4th. Operating a non-registered vehicle. Continued, 180 days. No insurance, 180 days. Continuance, all against Sean Goley of Fort Dodge. Voluntary absence from custody, Michael Leach, 41, of Fort Dodge. Preliminary hearing set for June 4th. Police logs from Wednesday include two domestic calls, shots fired, 1200 block 3rd Avenue Northwest. Suspicious person, 700 block Central Avenue. Suspicious person, Central Avenue North 8th Street. Harassment, 800 block South 16th Street. Trespassing, 10 block North 25th. Car accident, 2nd Avenue North, North 16th Street. Hit and run, 1600 block of 8th Avenue North. Criminal mischief, 200 block Avenue G. Trespassing, 1700 block 3rd Avenue South. Suspicious vehicle, 800 block 8th Avenue North. An alcohol violation at the 800 block of North 32nd Street. Juvenile problems, 1500 block North 24th. Criminal mischief, 900 block South 25th. Unknown problem, North 20th Street and 3rd Avenue North. Hit and run, 100 block Avenue O West. Suspicious person, 4th Avenue South and South 20th Street. An unknown problem in the 900 block of South 18th Street. A sexual assault was reported. An intoxicated pedestrian, 1300 block of A Street, criminal mischief, 100 block North 10th Street, burglary, 2000 block 4th Avenue North, gas drive off, 200 block North 15th Street, a fire, 500 block 3rd Avenue North, Suspicious Person, 2300 block of 15th Avenue South. Hit and Run, 1900 block of Elmhurst Avenue. A Runaway in the 1100 block of Cooper Drive. And Criminal Mischief in the 1300 block of South 19th Street. And is the Fort Dodge Police Log. Let's head over to the Lifestyle section. Lifestyle is where we usually find some happy news. We'll take a look at probably some birth announcements, and we'll look at some birthdays and things like that. Let's start with birthdays and anniversaries. From Algona, George Mack. George A. Mack of Algona, formerly of Jolly, celebrated his 95th birthday on May 25th. His family includes his wife, Julie, six stepdaughters, a stepson, and numerous step-grandchildren and step-great-grandchildren. Mr. Mack was born on May 25, 1926 at Jolly. He farmed for 45 years in the Jolly area. Retired at age 90 after serving in the Canoke Fire Department for 64 years. And retired from flying after 64 years at the age of 90. Roberta Ross. Roberta Ross of Fort Dodge celebrated her 90th birthday on Wednesday. She is a mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, great-great-grandmother, and an aunt. And let's see, the Bartletts. Janet and Steve Bartlett. Janet and Steve Bartlett celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary on Friday. Their family includes Matthew Bartlett, Timothy Bartlett, Joseph Bartlett, Seth Bartlett, Micah Bartlett, Adam Bartlett, Daniel Bartlett, Andrew Bartlett, Rachel Bornhoff, Ethan Bartlett, and Grace Bartlett. They have 37 grandchildren and two great-grandchildren. They were married on May 28, 1971 in Iowa Falls. They lived in Fort Dodge area for 49 years. He was a pharmacist for 42 years, 32 of which was with Walgreens. She homeschooled their 11 children for a total of 26 years. Let's see. Canopes, don't mean to mispronounce last names. From Dayton, Jean and Mary Knopf. Jean and Mary Knopf of Dayton will celebrate their 65th wedding anniversary Wednesday. Their family includes three children, five grandchildren, and three great-grandchildren. They were married on June 2, 1956. Before retiring, he worked at George A. Hormel in Fort Dodge and farmed by Dayton. She was the fourth grade teacher at Dayton Elementary. And that looks like all the birthdays and anniversaries for this time. So let's take a look and see if we have any new babies to tell you about. And by golly, it looks like we do. From Iowa Specialty Hospital, Kayla and John Roberts. Kayla and John Roberts of Fort Dodge welcomed a girl, Bella Susan Roberts, born May 24th. Grandparents are Thomas and Brenda Nelson and Terry and Susan Roberts. And that's the only arrival reported in the newspaper at this time. Let's go ahead and click on the back to the news section. And we'll see if I missed any important news articles. And we'll take a look next at some news briefs. COVID testing is moving back to the health center. The Community Health Center of Fort Dodge has closed its drive-through COVID-19 testing site at the East Campus of Iowa Central Community College. COVID-19 testing will resume at the health center at 126 North 10th Street on Tuesday. Citizen Central is going to reopen. Citizen Central, a community center offering activities for adults on weekdays, will reopen to the public on Tuesday. Citizen Central is operated by the Fort Dodge Parks, Recreation, and Forestry Department. General activities that will start back up include video yoga, regular pool players, new user pool, open card games, including dominoes, pitch, pocono, or any additional games with cards that users wish to do. Open exercise. The user fee is $50 for general building activities, exercise equipment, and volunteer movie-led classes. User fee prime is $80 for general building activities, exercise equipment, and organized exercise classes coming in the fall. Prime also includes discounted program classes from 20 to 50% off. Daily fee is $5 for general building activities, exercise equipment, and organized exercise classes. User fee and user fee Prime are available for those 50 and up. Daily fees are available to anyone. Trash pickup is being changed due to the upcoming Memorial Day holiday. Solid waste collection in Fort Dodge will be on a different schedule. Due to the Memorial Day holiday, refuse normally collected on Monday will be collected on Tuesday. Refuse collected on Tuesday will be collected on Thursday. Refuse collected on Thursday will be collected on Friday. No yard waste will be accepted at the Central Garage on 8th Avenue South. Curbside yard waste will not be picked up next week. The Fort Dodge City announces water shutoffs. A couple of fire hydrants will be replaced in Fort Dodge this week, causing water service to be shut off temporarily in some neighborhoods, the Public Works Department has reported. Beginning at 8 o'clock Tuesday, water will be shut off along North Soldier Creek Drive. Then at 5 a.m. Thursday, water service will be shut off on South 31st Street between 5th and 8th Avenue South, and on 2nd Avenue South between 31st and 32nd Street. South 31st Street between 5th and 8th Avenue South will be closed to traffic. And those are a handful of news briefs that were in the newspaper. There's a picture in the Messenger of firefighters leaving from a house, and there's a short article with this picture. Fort Dodge firefighter Orlando Peace Front carries equipment back to a fire engine as Shane Foote of Fort Dodge takes a photo of some flaming materials in a cooler Thursday night. Firefighters were called to this home at 314 6th Avenue North at about 10:03 p.m. for a report of a house fire. Foote, the owner of the home, said his wife woke him up after the smoke alarm sounded, and she woke him up. "I was sleeping and she yelled at me," Foote said. Foote said he saw flames on top of the stove and used a fire extinguisher while his wife called the fire department. Everyone, including two dogs, made it safely out of the house. Foote said the smoke alarms were a huge factor in alerting him to the fire. The Fort Dodge Police Department was also on scene. So just a reminder about the importance of having good working smoke detectors in your home. There's a couple of announcements in the newspaper from Holy Trinity Parish. Holy Trinity Catholic Parish on 4th Avenue North will hold a Eucharistic procession to celebrate the Feast of Corpus Christi, the Body of Christ, at 11 o'clock on June 6 following the 10 a.m. Mass. The procession will begin and end at the church. Additional parking will be available at St. Edmund School. Also, Holy Trinity Rocky Railway Vacation Bible School will be held June 7th through the 11th. Holy Trinity Catholic Parish will be hosting its annual Vacation Bible School from 8 to 11:30 on June 7th through the 11th at St. Edmund School on 4th Avenue North. More information is available by contacting the VBS conductor, Rita Anderson, at andersonr@st-edmund.pbt.k12.ia.us. Let's head over next to the Messenger opinion page. Reduction in building permit fees can help. That is the editorial in today's Messenger. Anyone thinking about building a dream home or anything else for that matter in rural Webster County has just received an extra incentive to do so. The County Board of Supervisors has cut the fees charged for building permits in half. The cost of any building permit for a project in unincorporated areas of the county has been reduced by 50% through the end of the year. In Webster County, building permit fees are based on the size of the structure, so how much someone pays depends on how big a structure they are planning. For example, thanks to the reduction, the fee for a house of less than 1,500 square feet is now $175. The lingering economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic prompted the supervisors to implement this reduction. They started by reenacting the reduction for single-family homes on May 11th and followed up by extending it to all other kinds of structures on May 25th. This is the kind of incentive that can persuade anyone thinking about building in the county to get it started. It can be that little nudge that moves building plans from the drawing board to reality. Will hundreds of buildings start going up across the county now? Probably not, but there will likely be some new construction, producing homes for families and facilities for farmers or businesses that might not otherwise be built this year. And as Webster County continues to emerge from the pandemic, such development can only help. We thank the Board of Supervisors for its forward-thinking approach and encourage anyone thinking about building to take advantage of this price break. A second editorial is available to read. This would have appeared in Friday's paper. It's entitled, Fort Dodge Teens Show Patriotism. Anyone who thinks that today's American teenagers don't care about patriotism or honoring the nation's veterans received a heartwarming surprise recently. Members of the Fort Dodge Senior High School girls golf team went to Veterans Memorial Park north of Fort Dodge Wednesday to replace all of the small American flags that decorate the various markers. Their work helped to ensure the park overlooking Badger Lake will look its best for the anticipated visitors this Memorial Day weekend. The young women immediately realized that doing so would be an honor. A couple of the golfers walked through the park, pulling the old faded flags out of the ground. Others followed, planting fresh flags into the ground next to the markers, which bears the name of local veterans from all branches of the American military. About 350 flags were replaced. Dave Luke, the team's coach, took all the flags to Veterans Foreign Wars Post 1856 in Fort Dodge for proper disposal. Everyone who will visit the park on this Memorial Day weekend will see dozens of crisp new American flags thanks to the work of the golfers. We're not surprised that Fort Dodge teenagers would pitch in to do something to honor our veterans. We're grateful for the patriotism and willingness to go the extra mile demonstrated by the members of the Fort Dodge Senior High School girls golf team. Let's go ahead and head over to the sports section. Take a look at what awaits us there. Making their season debut, the St. Edmund baseball team scored a 6-3 victory over Emmitsburg Friday night at Rogers Park. The Gales plated two runs in the first, second, and fifth behind the pitching of seniors Kale Kalasha and Peyton Scott. Arriving just hours after completing his round at State Golf, Scott tossed the final four innings, striking out seven batters. Kalasha had six strikeouts over three innings of work as both threw 68 pitches. I saw a lot of positives, said St. Ed's coach Mike Zalot. We've still got improvements to make, but it feels good to get the win. Grant Heldorfer was 2-for-2 at the plate with a triple, three runs scored in an RBI, and a walk to lead St. Edmund. Hayden Derrick, Joe Lee, and Drew Zalot each had a hit. Derrick, Zalot, and J.T. Loffesweiler scored a run, with Derrick, John Nemers, and Zalot working a walk each. We've got a busy stretch here to begin the season, said Coach Zalot. We're going to really be able to use a lot of guys in different situations and positions to try and find out what works best. Emmitsburg threatened in the later innings, but Scott was able to close the door on any scoring chances. The E-Hawks left 10 runners on base. One thing we have to do a better job is staying focused and ready in the field when we have guys like Kale and Peyton on the mound. We really didn't make any mistakes, but we weren't as crisp as we need to be. That's an area where we've been really working hard on to improve. St. Edmund has a busy week ahead of them, hosting intra-city rival Fort Dodge in a Memorial Day tournament on Monday that also includes Newell Fonda and Wes Marshall. After that, the Gales welcome Southeast Valley on Tuesday, play at Algona on Wednesday, at Hampton Dumont Cal on Thursday, and in the CYO next Saturday versus Lamar's Galen and Bishop Garrigan. Getting back to the main page of the Messenger, the Gales golf team finished fourth at the state meet. Newell Fonda was the Class 1A runner-up. The St. Edmund boys golf team vaulted up the standings here Friday on day two of the Class 1A state meet behind Drew Schaefer. After finishing the opening round in seventh, Gales climbed three spots to place fourth overall, with Schaefer securing sixth individually. Ackley Geneva Wellsburg Steamboat Rock held off Newell Fonda for the team title, with East Buchanan just behind in third. After the Gales finished, North Tama, Fremont Mills, Mason City Newman, Council Bluffs St. Albert, and North Cedar. Lucas Gunderson of Harris Lake Park, who was in the same district as both St. Edmund and Newell Fonda, won the individual state title with rounds of 76 and 73. Hogan Henrik from New Alfonda was runner-up, 6 shots back. St. Edmund took 10 shots off its total from the opening day, as the 350 they posted was the third best score of the round. Hackley Geneva, Wellsburg Steamboat Rock, fired a 348 and East Buchanan a 349. I felt like we played really, really well. We could get third, said head coach Matt Dillon. We did, but the deficit was just a little too much to try and overcome. Still, for these guys to battle and place fourth was a great accomplishment. They came out and got after it, and I'm proud of them. Schaefer followed up his 81 on Thursday with an 82, placing just 2 strokes back of the fifth-place finisher. The senior also qualified for state as a freshman. It has been a great 4 years at St. Edmund. I couldn't dream of a better way to end it, Schaefer said. While there is definitely room for improvement, I'm very happy with the rest. To medal as a team and as an individual is a dream come true. I couldn't ask for a better group of guys to do it with either. For the seniors, it's a great send-off for all of us. We couldn't be happier with the way it ended and how we battled back after day one. This is one of the best moments of my life. For the Mustangs, Isaac Barron was 20th with a 2-day total of 176. Jake DeMay finished 25th with a 178, and Mason Dix was 29th with a 182. I thought the course played extremely hard, said New Alfonda head coach Nathan Barron. It was cold and wet, and the greens were tough. I liked our position going into the round. We could just not get over the hump. We'll head back to the main page of the sports section in search of our next article. The number one Fort Dodge Dodgers softball team settled for a split at 6th-rated West Des Moines Valley. Top-ranked Class 5A Fort Dodge continued a consistent pattern of relative inconsistency as a busy opening week began to wind down. That's not necessarily uncommon in the eyes of Dodger head coach Andy Adams. Senior High easily handled number 6 West Des Moines Valley in the opener of Friday's Twin Bill by a final of 7-2. But the Tigers were able to outlast the visitors and salvage a split in an 8-7 nightcap victory. It's early, and we're all kind of figuring each other out, along with seeing what we have in our own camps, Adams said. Even the more experienced teams like ours, you just don't hit the field as a finished product. It takes time and work and adjustments. We're a long way from where we want to be in mid to late July, but the same could be said for all of these CIML powers. We're finding out a lot about this group and the lineup, which is good. This is a fluid situation. I thought compared to what we showed offensively in a split on Monday against Johnston, we took a step forward and really fought hard before coming up just short in that second game. The Dodgers, 3-2 overall for the year, exploded out of the gates early, plating 2 runs in the first inning, 2 more in the third to take a 4-0 lead. 8th grader Mariah Myers delivered the big blow with a deep 2-run homer, the first of her varsity career. That was more than enough for junior ace Jalen Adams, who fired a complete Game 3 hitter at 12 strikeouts. Adams' only hiccup was allowing a 2-run deep drive to Tiger leadoff hitter Greta Dahlin, the first 2 runs given up in 22 innings of work this season by the University of Iowa recruit. Jalen was off at the plate, going 0-for-5 after starting the year 9-for-11, but it didn't affect her mentality in the pitcher's circle, said Coach Adams. Mariah was awesome in the first game especially. She had 3 hits and got on base all 4 times up. Just a really special performance, the first of many. The Tigers turned the tables in the second affair, scoring 4 runs in the opening frame. Fort Dodge fought back with 3 runs in the second, 1 in the 4th, 1 in the 5th to briefly go ahead at 5-4. But Valley answered with a 4-run knockout punch in the 5th. After striking out 3 times in the opener, Katie Shanner bounced back with 2 hits, a triple, and 4 RBI for the Tigers. Junior shortstop Torrey Bennett recorded 4 hits and scored 2 for the Dodgers. Myers knocked in 2 more runs, pushing this week's total to 13. Fort Dodge returns to action on Saturday at the Sioux City Helan Invitational. The Dodgers take on Helan and Lamar's, and I can tell you that I peaked, and the Dodgers did win both games on Saturday. Bill Sherborne doesn't expect the St. Edmund softball team to be firing on all cylinders just 3 games into the season, but the second-year head coach is pleased where they are standing, even after a tough 3-2 setback to Iowa Falls Friday night. At time this year, the Gales, 1-2 overall, took an early lead on an RBI by senior Casey Krutoff in the opening inning. After the Cadets answered back to go up 2-1 in the third, St. Edmund answered when Gracie Harvey drove in Ella Ratney. The game would remain tied at 2-2 until the 7th when Iowa Falls Alden's Marley Lancaster plated Ellie Wood. Elise Osman set the Gales down in order to secure the win. "We're doing a lot of good things," Sherborne said. "Our defense played really well. Ella looked strong, and we put a few runs together from the top of our lineup. We've got to get more consistency throughout our lineup." Brantley struck out 6 and allowed just 5 hits, walking only one batter. She was also 1-for-1 at the plate, with a double, 2 walks, and 2 runs scored. Krutoff and Harvey each had an RBI, but the Gales had just 2 base runners after the 3rd inning. St. Edmunds returns to action Tuesday when they host Southeast Valley. And since our time together is drawing to a close, let's go ahead and get to our forecast. On Memorial Day, Monday, looking for a high of 74 under partly cloudy skies, 51 for a low. Partly cloudy Tuesday, high of 77, low of 54. Partly cloudy Wednesday, high of 77, low of 57. Warming up to 83 on Thursday under partly cloudy skies, low of 61. Mostly clear Friday, high of 88 with a low of 65. Mostly clear and high of 89. And so the weather forecast looks really pretty darn good for the next 7 days or so. Looks really good for Frontier Days. Got a birthday party to go to. We've got a wedding to go to. So there's all sorts of good weather. Let's hope it stays that way. That's going to bring us to the end of the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Thank you again for spending this time with me. I so much appreciate your company. Of course, this podcast and many other awesome podcasts are available to you at the iowaradioreading.org website. We certainly hope that you are able to utilize those podcasts. And thank you for your continued support of IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. Stay safe, stay healthy, a blessed Memorial Day to everyone, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Bye-bye for now.